everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Lesbian Mommies Radio. I am your host. Thank you so much for tuning in on this beautiful Monday. Tonight, we are talking to Diane and Kristen Ponis. They are bloggers at the website thenextfamily.com, and they blog about their experience being foster parents. Now, I did some research, obviously, for the show, and reading about their experiences as foster parents was both excruciating and inspiring. So just amazing what they have to deal with, the challenges they have to deal with, and then just how much of an impact it has on these kids. It's just a really awesome, awesome story. It's really obvious to me that it takes some really big-hearted, strong, and committed people to foster children. So I'm really excited to get into that tonight. First, I want to say thank you to Betsy Kirshner. She is the one that introduced me to these two. You might remember her from a show just a few weeks ago on the Pride and Joy Project. So if you missed that, definitely go check that one out. And then in a couple weeks, I have a guest on who chose to start a family as a single lesbian mom. That was actually a recent request by a listener, Heather. So that was going to be on in a couple weeks. So definitely tune in for that one. She's an amazing lady, so excited to share her story. You can find us online, lesbianmommies.com. Facebook is facebook.com/lesbianmommiesradio, and Twitter is at lesbianmomsradio. All right, let me introduce Diane and Kristen Ponis. Diane and Kristen were the first same-sex couple to adopt jointly in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Married in 2010, they are advocates for fostering and adoption and write a column on this topic for thenextfamily.com. Their goal is to assist and inform those who have hopes of accomplishing all that they have accomplished with fostering and adoption. They blog about the foster and adoption process, as well as tips to cope with the stress and challenges that come with being foster parents, including those as a married same-sex couple. Dan and Kristen currently have 4 foster children and 1 adopted child. Dan and Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So start us off by really kind of telling the story of how you got started in all of this.
Well, we decided that for a while we wanted to adopt a foster. We wanted to adopt technically first. And Kristen was researching on how we can do this without spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to adopt a child, because we wanted to give a child, or many children, a home that didn't have one. And we found our son, DeAndre, who we adopted. We found him about 7 hours away in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And we found him online. And we saw a picture, and we took an online catalog for children that are waiting to be adopted, that are in the foster system. And we went up and met him. We found out that he was autistic, and we knew nothing about autism. But the instant we met him, we fell in love. But instant connection, was there not?
Yeah, I believe so. There was.
Right. There was an instant connection with him. So, and we heard his story of what he's been through and how many different homes that he was in. And he was very far behind. So once we adopted him, we learned that there are so many other children that needed homes, had worse stories than he had, and had been in more homes than he was. And it broke our heart. So we decided to open our hearts to fostering. And now this is what we do. We have one adopted, and one of the youngest one in the house, and she's the next, who's going to be adopted as well. So she's going that route too. Yes. She, just a couple weeks ago, has been legally free for adoption, so she will be the next to be adopted.
Awesome.
And then next month, we have 2 more. The other 2 are going to be legally free for adoption on the same day. So, yes, we're growing. Our family's growing pretty quickly.
We're going to be adopting 3 in 2 months.
Yeah.
Wow. So now, as same-sex couples in the adoption, when you were adopting out of the foster care system, was there any stuff you had to deal with being gay couples?
We didn't think we'd be able to adopt DeAndre at first. The night before the adoption went through, I was stressing out. stressing out completely. We called our attorney, who did the adoption for us, because of it wasn't done in the state of Pennsylvania before that we knew of, and especially in the county that we live in. And we called the attorney, what, 10 o'clock at night, was it?
Yeah, I think it was like 10:30, almost close
okay.
to 11.
Yeah, the night before, stressing out, sweating bullets because of we're thinking, oh, what if this doesn't go through? We have our family coming. We're excited. We have him excited for it. We're talking to him about it. What if this doesn't go through? What are we going to do? And they were saying, oh, then, well, just one of you could adopt or we could try to force it through. So what we did was we decided, no, we're going to go full force. So we showed up to court expecting a fight, and it was actually quite easy. The judge just looked at both of us and just said, how's it going? And we were, the only thing he asked us, and we said, it's a struggle sometimes, but it's amazing. And he goes, okay, it's approved. And it was that simple. And
wow.
So now there's no same-sex couples have been questioned since we've done this. They realize, okay, well, you guys are a loving family, and that's all that matters now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty
great.
Good. I mean, because there wasn't a ban in Pennsylvania, but it wasn't exactly a law saying it was allowed. So we were kind of fluctuating back and forth.
We were super nervous about it,
when
we got there.
Absolutely. Absolutely nervous.
Heck yeah. Wow. Awesome. That's so great. So then at what point did you decide to foster right after that?
About... Well, we looked into it, and then we were kind of figuring things out and going back and forth on the idea, and then we decided we were going to do it, and we started January.
They had
right?
because of the we went through just adoption with DeAndre. We had to wait 6 months after his adoption to begin the fostering process. That's I think it was the agency's.
Yeah,
no,
it was
wasn't
a rule upon the agency, yeah. And then we also
right,
had to
so
take
we,
fostering classes as well.
Right, we had to do fostering classes and just get recertified and everything like that. And we had to pep talk each other. Okay, can we do this? Can we prepare to let go? It just you have to mentally prepare yourselves for, okay, well, what happens if we fall in love with this child and we're going to have to let it go or we're going to be able to do this? And it's just a lot of mental preparation before we even got started with this. And then you realize that it doesn't, and then you get in the mindset if it doesn't matter, even if you impact them for that little bit, it's good enough for us.
Yeah, wow. So then the process for fostering, is that different at all because you're same-sex couples, or it pretty much doesn't matter?
It didn't matter. We needed a marriage license to prove that we were married.
Okay.
Everything else is the same. It's saying that you know, a credit check, they do a house check, they check our criminal background. Everything was the same, but they required for us because of we stated that we were married, that we had a marriage license, which was good enough for them. But even single couples, single people are adopting, and it doesn't matter anymore, apparently. But I think if you're going into it as a couple, they would prefer you be married.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah. Okay.
Awesome. So now, as we mentioned, you have 4 foster kids and DeAndre. Tell us about the kids.
We have a 5-year-old. We have 2 3-year-olds that are like twins, but they're a week apart. And we have our 1-year-old.
And DeAndre's 8.
Yeah.
DeAndre's 8. Okay. Awesome.
But the 2 3-year-olds are not related, they're not biological, and they are a week apart.
They're the same.
Yeah. And one of them are autistic as well and nonverbal, and she has a lot of health issues that she came with. She was a high-risk health child that we took in.
Wow.
She was the last one we took in.
Wow. You have 3 under or 3 and younger. Or like, you know, 4, 5 and it's a lot of little kids. It's amazing. You got your hands full.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's fun. It's amazing. I couldn't imagine having
hearts.
Any. Yeah.
Obviously.
I couldn't imagine having any less than what we have. If one's gone for the day for something or other, we're bored. But the thing that helps us is we're so energetic. I mean, every weekend, if we're not out and about, you're going to find us in our backyard with the trampoline or the swing set and or the pool and playing frisbee and wiffle ball. We're constantly going, which we wear them out constantly, which is good. It helps.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, was what a typical day is like, since they're all so young. I mean, you've got them all day. They're not all in, they're not in school. So it sounds like you're just out playing and taking them out.
Yeah, well, we had to make a decision of, because we both were working. We both had 8-to-5 jobs. And after the second child that we received after DeAndre's adoption, Kristen was a paralegal. And she's always wanted to be the stay-at-home mom if that needed to be. And so we made a decision that she would, you know, resign from her position and do that. And after she did that, then we decided to take on more children each time.
Wow.
I mean, we wouldn't be able to do it without that. It would probably be impossible if both of us were working full-time still.
Oh, gosh.
Right, and I prefer for one of us to actually raise our children rather than a babysitter.
I hear you.
So, absolutely. Otherwise, what's the point?
Totally.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, Kristen, you've got 5 kids that you're carrying around. They love it. How do you, like, manage? Do you have a really, like, a stroller that sleeps 3 and then... Two of them are walking?
Well, 2.5 are in diapers.
Yeah. And well, I'm very structured, so everything happens at certain times, and we do things at certain times, and we have activities, and lunch is at 12, and then we do snack. I don't even realize what time of the day it is anymore. My time just flies by.
It's almost like a military regimen. It's everything's got a time, and that's when this happens. If not, then it's going to throw the rest of the day off, and we got to fall back into line. When I come home
and
from
plus
work,
having
I have
two children. You have to have structure with them because our son DeAndre, he loves time, so everything has to be at a certain time.
Because of his autism, everything's exact. If you say give me 5 minutes, he's counting in his head 5 minutes to be on the exact. And when I come home from work, I have to fall into Kristen's regimen in the house. And we've had conversations recently that, look, I feel like an outsider. I come home and I have to follow your rules. And if I don't follow your rules too, then it throws the kids off and throws the house off. And so Kristen had to learn on the weekends when I'm home to let go a little bit and to let me do things a little differently than she does during the week, that things don't have to be exact. And but I understand why she does it, because that's the system that works for her. I get it completely. It's just hard for me to fit into that sometimes.
Totally. And it might be really good for the kids, too, to have that much structure, because a lot of them are
absolutely
unstructured.
Absolutely. And she hates it, though. When I come home and I give them cookies at 10 o'clock for snack on the weekend, and she looks at me and she goes, really? Now I'm going to pay for this all week, because they're going to be mad at me because I give them just boring things during snack in the morning, and you give them cookies.
And I hear about it the next day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now, you know, the foster care children, I know that a lot of these kids have coming out of such unstructured and sometimes very challenging environments for them. I mean, that's obviously why they were taken from their homes, because there's a reason. And I know they often have behavioral challenges. What is your experience with that? How has it been? How do you deal with that? And what kind of changes do you see in them over time with you guys?
Every one of them has come with behavioral issues, but different. They all come, but they're all different. Am I wrong, Kristen? Every one of them has been different, but all of them have behavioral differences, the changes.
Yeah.
Correct?
All of their personalities are crazy. It's like different too.
And two of them are, DeAndre especially, he's autistic, and he used to be nonverbal. But since we've gotten the foster children, he's talking more. He talks pretty fluently now, which didn't start until we got children in the home, and they told us when we adopted him that he would probably never be able to talk.
Oh.
So we've had to deal with him. Now, Nevaeh, who's the last one we got in the house, she's very much like DeAndre. She's autistic. She has something called short gut syndrome, which we deal with her medical needs on top of her mental needs, and she's nonverbal. Before she came in the house, we had the house pretty structured already, even with the one-year-old. We had the house structured. And Kristen said it to me the other night, she treats her like the other children. She doesn't treat her like she's special needs. And she said to me, she's like, if I treat her that way, she's going to act like that, and we can't have that. If she's going to get on the same schedule and the same regimen as everybody else, then we have to treat her that she doesn't have these special needs. And she's right. It's working.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's...
Well, because she's now she's now talking now, and she's acting like she has the mentality of a baby, because she's three and she's been through so much stuff. So I want to treat her as if she's a 3-year-old.
The past 2 years, yeah, it's she's getting there. She's getting there. You teach her things and she learns in a day, but no one has given her that opportunity.
Wow.
But I mean, we still do baby her, though, because she still deserves it, because she deserves the attention. But we know
right,
when you can and can't do it.
We kind of baby all of them in a certain way, so they all get special attention, but her especially
right.
because of she was so neglected and so abused and has medical conditions. But they didn't expect her to live.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's why we look back and we say, you know, this is what we were meant to do this. Because they told us just recently, what, not even a month ago, that the doctors are puzzled sometimes on what to do with her medically because of they didn't expect her to make it.
Yeah,
they
they're all confused as to how it happened.
Right. They're like, Kristen gets frustrated and is in tears sometimes because the doctors are telling her 10 different things to do, and her head is spinning, and they're like, well, you know, you got to bear with us. We just didn't expect her to come this far. Well, here now she's amazing. She's gained weight when they didn't think she could, and she's running around with the other kids, and she's living life, and they just didn't expect her to get to this point.
Wow. So now you said, like, 14 homes in 3 years, right?
At least.
Why?
Because
so many homes?
She was, because of what you asked, because of your question, the emotional change, the emotional issues that had to be dealt with, no one wanted to deal with them. Fostering, you have to step back and you have to realize, I get it's annoying, it's frustrating, and they're screaming, they're yelling, they're hitting the wall, they're kicking at times because they're scared and they don't know what's going on. And all you have to do is really just look at that face and think, how can nobody want these kids? No one loved them. No one cared about them. That's why they're here. So you kind of, we help, when they freak out, what do? We hold them. We hug them and just say, you're okay. You're okay. We got you. You're safe now. And we work through it. We work through every temper tantrum, and we talk them through it. And Kristen used to make fun of me. She's like, oh, you talk to them like they're adults, because sometimes you have to, because that's how they're going to get it.
It is super frustrating sometimes, though.
Oh, it's very frustrating. You have to, we have to have an outlet. It is, like Kristen joined the gym and goes to the gym because she's with the kids when I'm at work. It's very frustrating, but then you sit back and you realize why you're doing this.
You two must be the most patient people on the planet.
No, I'm sure there's more people like us. Just
but now, I know when I was reading the blog, talking about just the experience you have with some of the biological parents, because I know the kids go through, they have visitation, right? Some of them do?
Yes, some of them do.
Yes.
I mean, share some of that, like just your experience with how that works with the biological parents and what that sounds.
That's funny, because that's what my next blog is about, that too. And it's not just for foster parents, but it's also for single parents or parent people that co-parent with somebody else and deal with what we deal with, I'm sure.
I think the most frustrating thing that we have to deal with the biological parents is that they're allowed to say whatever they want to the kids, whatever they want.
Yep.
And it's
and we deal with the emotional breakdown from that, from telling them that they're not going home, that this isn't going to happen.
It can even be just a simple phone call, not even a visitation, like a simple phone call that the biological parent has with the child. And it's and after that one phone call, it's just the rest of the day is just all torn apart because of it.
But it's not just with the kids. Sometimes it's with us.
Right.
How can you don't show up for visits with your child. You don't buy them anything at all. You don't want to be bothered with them. You say you want them back, but you're not doing anything to show that you want them back. You're not fighting like you should be fighting if you lost your child. And to sit on the phone with us hearing you and saying, I'm fighting for you. I'm going to get you back. You're going to come home to me. And the the kids are just like, who are you? Like, they don't, most of them don't consider their parents parents. They consider them just somebody they see sometimes. And we said, I think it's you, Kristen, more than me. How could she say this? How could she do that? It just tears us apart because if we're the ones doing what they're not.
Because it's super frustrating to me because I'm the one that normally sees it firsthand because I'm the one that, like, I have to deal with the biological parents. But, I mean, Diane does also. But
not nearly as much as you.
Well, I have to take the kids to the visitations, and I see the biological parents, and the biological parents call, or biological parents, I'm sorry, calls me, and if I don't answer, she'll call me and call me and call me until
11 o'clock
I answer.
At night. 11 o'clock at night, we'll call repeatedly until we answer the phone. And it's not even about the child, it's about herself and wanting to vent to us for something that has nothing to do with us or our house.
Because to her, she feels that we're friends. But I play nice. That's what you kind of have to do.
We do what we can to make it easier for the children, and the biological parents sometimes confuse that with why we're really doing what we're doing. But it's very
good. And then if he's sick, because if one of our children are sick and I have to call and tell the parent, the bio, that he's sick, well, do this for him. He likes this, as if I didn't know any of that.
As if we haven't been raising him for the past year and a half, and he's only 3 years old. It's just, or summer's coming. He only likes to wear these sandals. We know. We bought them for him last summer. We're the ones who got him into sandals. They're trying to tell us how to parent the child that they don't have, and that's the frustrating part, too. Or it's feeding them junk for the 1 hour they see them every so many weeks. And then we deal with the stomach issues for the next several days just because they want to be the good guy. It's very frustrating.
There's a story, one of your blog posts about, I think it was a birthday party, and one of the biological parents was supposed to come and said they're going to come and blah, 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 and then never ended up showing up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was our three-year-old.
That was our three-year-old. And we had the whole family going to this thing. We were going to make her feel like part of the family because of, she was also a foster child who grew out of the system, and she's the one we keep in contact the most because we said to her, we know you can't get him back. We know you can't. You can barely support yourself. You're not supporting yourself. And to us, you're family because you're our son's mother. You're his biological mother, and without you, we wouldn't have him. And he's one of the ones that are going through adoption, and we've even invited her to our home. You know, after we adopt him, you're more than welcome to come. We'll do holidays together. We'll do birthdays together. And each time we lend that hand out, she doesn't reach for it.
So which I don't understand why, because she doesn't have any family.
She has no family. And we told her that we are definitely family. Like it or not, we are. We share a son, and she won't take that handout that we keep giving her.
Ashton, I wonder if it's really confronting for her to know that she just, you know, she had this baby and she can't be the mom. She comes into your house and you guys are the moms, obviously, you know, and girls are the moms. Oh, that's unfortunate. Now, another thing I was reading was about you're currently going through a reunification process, right, with one of your foster sons?
Yes, with our 5-year-old.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well,
it's hard to read. We don't know which way it's going to go. We've been saying this every day for the past 2 weeks.
We've been hearing one thing, and then we hear another thing, and it's just, one
it seems
is
like
that
nobody communicates. Everybody has a different opinion, and it's all going to come down to the judge, and we have no idea what's going to happen. But in the meantime, we're preparing him to go back, and the rest of the children, and the rest of our extended family. We prepared ourselves. We've already, okay, well, if he goes back, we did our job. The past year, he's completely changed. He's grown up a little bit more. He's more confident in himself. He talks more openly. He knows right from wrong now. He knows personal hygiene that he didn't know before. it's we feel confident that he's better. And then we have to look at the bright side and say, okay, well, now this gives us room to take in another little boy because now we have a bed open in the boys' room and we can keep doing this and keep in touch with them. It's hard. And then what if he does stay? And then it's, are we the liars? Are we, you know, it just, it's hard. This is the part that's hard, is that transition.
Is this the first one?
This is the first one that we may be losing on good terms.
Yeah.
We had another foster child that we had to have go to another foster home because it wasn't working out. It got really bad. It got to the point where it just wasn't safe for the other children anymore, so we had to make a very, very hard decision to have her move to another home that might be safer for her and for all of us as well. And then we learned later on that we made a very, very good decision in the nick of time of having this happen because of she's now in a facility for getting help. And she's only five. Oh, now she's 6 years old.
Now she's six, yeah.
Oh,
so it's just, and you just don't know sometimes what's going on in these kids' head. And what the problem with her was she would have went to adoption eventually, but she didn't want to go to adoption. She loved us dearly, but she was hoping that her mother would do the right thing and get her back.
She just had so much anger inside.
So much anger.
It was just building up and building up.
And then her mother kept having more children and is pregnant again with her fifth or sixth child now. And
yes.
Just keeps thinking, why are you having more children and you don't even have me and I'm the oldest? So that something like that, you can't change that in a kid's mind. You can't fix that.
And she was very smart for a six-year-old.
Too smart. She was like a 17-year-old in a five-year-old body.
Wow. Now, does the system provide them with counseling?
What do you think? Go ahead, you can answer that one.
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
Does the system provide them with counseling?
No.
Not really. Not really.
Not
I mean, it all
saying.
Depends on... It all depends on if... Not counseling, but more therapy. But we only have one of them that goes to therapy.
First of all, well, they supply, the healthcare supplies it, but we have to fight for it. We are the ones that say what they need. We're the ones who say that they need... Like the one we told you, we had to have her moved to another foster home. We're the ones who said she needs therapy. She needs anger management, and we had to push for that. And with Nevaeh now, who's 3 years old with us in special needs, how many days did you cry, Kristen?
Well, because it wouldn't help us out with anything. I was trying to get her IEP, which is, what does it stand for? Eternal?
I don't remember.
A plan, an individualized plan for her. And it basically it shows us what she needs, like her needs wise, speech, occupational, like therapies. And I literally argued with people for weeks, months to try and get her therapies that she needed. And I finally
she needed
got
early
down
intervention,
to it.
And we were ready for it. We were gung-ho. We know what she needs. Let's get this done. And no one would answer us. No one would help.
Nobody would help. I had to call, because she was from a different county, so I had to call that county and get her her IEP sent over to our district.
Which took months and months. It's been a fight, and finally now, after 7 months, she's getting her therapies.
But if she was getting her therapy sooner, she probably would have been, she'd probably been more progressed than what she already is now.
Right. But she was not in any foster home that was willing to help her or to put up that fight to push to protect her.
Easy. Now talk a little bit about the system. I know you guys go into it in the blog post. And even part of my question, too, is kind of the reunification with your foster son, because they, you know, they take him out of the home because of that situation. Now they're looking to bring him back in the home. So I'm just curious about what that's like as far as the system and if that's the best for the kid. And then just some of the other frustrations that you deal with the foster care system in general.
It's not the best for the kid. It's not. We have been fighting.
Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not.
But for our situation?
No, it's not.
We are ready to let go because we have to. We fought everything that we possibly could fight. We've proven everything we possibly could prove. But when Human Services have some, we learned through this whole process that Human Services and family courts, they have quotas and goals as well, that they have to put so many kids back in a home, so many kids go to adoption, so many kids. We learned this. And you learn that, okay, this one was meant to go home. This one was meant to go. You learn almost in the beginning kind of when you see the way this pattern is going.
So they kind of give you that story.
With him, we thought in the beginning, everyone told us there's no way he's going back. The abuse that he substantiated made us both cry when we read the doctor's reports. Christian, in another blog, I'm sure you read that she had to take the stand to testify what he told us about his past and what history. And we cried and celebrated that night because of the two of them looked this man in the eye and told the truth and told everything that happened that we knew, and it was enough to put him in prison. But to the point where there's other people involved, that can't be proven. It's only word of mouth. So we have to trust that what we've told him in the past year of good touch, bad touch, and speak up and don't let anybody hurt you, and you know to always tell the truth, no matter what, you tell the truth. We have to go by that and hope that he'll be okay, because of they feel that now that they have the system itself has nothing to fight against the biological family and the biological attorney. You have to accept sometimes that it's not the best, but there's only so much we can do.
Yeah, we fought really hard for him.
He's torn. He's torn because he loves both families. He loves our family, and he knows his family. And he wants to believe that they are telling him that things are going to be different now.
We have to keep it positive with him.
We had to. No matter how bad it is at your home when you're little, that's still your home. That's still your family. So he goes by that that's still my mom. That's still my siblings still live there. And he wants to believe that everything's going to be back better than it was before, which we're seeing that it's nothing's changed. But we just have to wait and just hope that the right decision's made.
But he's torn between two families, and he's so confused, and
he
wants
sad.
To be there, but he wants to be here, and
He says he wants to go back because he feels that he was already told he's supposed to say that. He was told that he's supposed to go back. And he's torn between that and wanting to stay here.
As of going to the back to the conversation of what the biological parents say in the visits.
Yeah. They can, the biological mother is just, very intimidating. Very intimidating and makes him say things that it's not the truth and he doesn't want to say, and it's sad, but there's nothing we can do.
That's crazy. Now, let's say he goes back to his biological family, do you choose to stay in contact with him? Can you stay in contact with him, or they pretty much cut you out at that point?
It's up to him. We're able to stay in contact with him. We already told him that we would, and we have his biological mom's cell phone number, and we already talked about it, and that if the bio parent is okay with it, that we would go pick him up and have him
right.
come over
it's
for
an,
the
it's
day.
It's kind of the balls in their court a little bit, but
okay.
it's kind of hard for them to adjust to going back there and not speaking to us anymore, so I'm sure there's still going to be contact. We told him that just because he doesn't live in our house doesn't mean we're not family, and that, I think, helps. You know, just like cousins and aunts and uncles and what have you, that just because they don't live with us doesn't mean they're not family. We're always going to be your family. We're always going to be mom and mommy to you. We just might live in a different house than you.
That was a, you brought up a good point with mom and mommy. Has being same-sex couples impacted this process at all for the kids, for you publicly with teachers or anything else? Like, has that come up or impacted the process?
No, I thought it would come up more. I thought we'd have more issues being a same-sex couple. And when we first started doing this, we thought we were not, because we're both Caucasian, that we weren't going to take on dark-skinned children because of we didn't want them to not only be different because they're in foster system, but because then they have not only two mommies, but two mommies of a different color.
Yeah.
And then we learned through this that we teach our kids to love everybody, no matter what. And that's that. We don't, religion, race, sexuality, it doesn't matter. And they don't care. And, I mean, that's all we can instill in them is it doesn't matter. And the
love
Bible
is love.
Yeah, that's all they know. That's all they know.
That's it.
And it they don't care. We've asked them, and they don't. No, you're my parents. You're mom and mommy. Who cares? DeAndre, Kristen asked DeAndre all the time, why are you special? Because I have a mom and a mommy. he gloats about it. He said on St. Patrick's Day in school with his class, and they went around their room and saying how they're lucky. He says, I'm lucky because I have a mom and a mommy. And all the kids are like, oh, wow, you're cool. But the biological parents, have we had issues with this? Sometimes, yeah. They'll try to use that against us, thinking it's going to give them a better chance of getting their kids back, saying that they don't agree with our lifestyle, so they don't want their kids in our home. But then we've actually confronted that head on and proved that their child is better with us, and we tell them why. We tell them what we do. We tell them how we help their children, and we tell them, you know, their kid, you know, don't have what they have here with any other family. Even other foster families. We go a little bit more above and beyond than most people do.
What would you say are the biggest rewards for you in doing this?
I'm sorry, repeat that? You broke up a little bit.
What would you say are the biggest rewards in helping out these kids for you?
With smiles. How many times they tell us they love us throughout the day? It's uncontrollable. It's just all day long. They don't want to be without us. And when we're with them, which is often, I remember when I was little, I didn't want to be around my parents. I wanted to play in other rooms. They're not like that. They want to be with us always, constantly. And as much, sometimes you need a break. It makes you feel good that you're wanted like that, and they learn that somebody does love them and cares about them. And
you literally walk out of the room and they're looking for you.
Literally.
Within 5 seconds.
Yeah, or they're holding on to your leg as you're walking through the house. We have family time. We have every weekend. We have family fun day, and we are constantly, constantly together. And the kids can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
And it's just, we sit back and we'll watch them play together on the floor, and you just sit back and you just play, like, how could people not want them? It's astounding, and it's just rewarding enough to see their accomplishments. Saturday, I was in the pool with Nevaeh. Kristen was at the food store with Kyra. Was it Kyra or Cameron? You had Cameron.
Cameron.
And Nevaeh, who is the special, she's autistic and she has short gut syndrome. We couldn't barely get her to go in our fur pool. And I kept saying, Nevaeh, come on. And she was screaming and screaming because that's all she can do sometimes. A little bit of talking, but kept saying, put your feet down, put your feet down. And she did, and she was walking clear across the pool. So I grabbed my phone and took a video to show Kristen because I could not wait because these things are big things.
Yeah.
Then she gets to crying in the cereal aisle.
Right. Okay. It's these small things, the small things that people take for granted. We don't. These are huge things for us. DeAndre.
I think also memories. Memories is very rewarding to us because we have tons.
Tons, and we make books for them. We've made picture books and life books, if you will. And if they leave our home, they take it with them and can look back and say, this is what we've done together. This is it. Every holiday we make huge because we don't know if that's going to be the last holiday they have with us or not. It's very rewarding. It's very rewarding what we do. And just the small things make a huge difference.
And I also think that it's drawn us closer.
Absolutely. Our marriage is 1,000 times stronger now than what it was before we started doing this. And we were close before we started doing this. But now it's just because no one knows the fight at all angles that each other, that we know what we deal with.
That's really awesome to hear because so much we hear about how kids stress a relationship to the point where the relationship usually doesn't do as well or fails often. And it's so cool to hear you two saying that it's making your relationship strong. That's a real testament to you and how you face your challenges together, you know.
I can't imagine how people, we do, we hear that too, though. Oh, you know, kids, you know, can ruin a marriage. We don't understand how that's possible. Maybe because if we go about it a different way, maybe because we did, fostering adoption, because we appreciate what we have and where they've come from. I don't know, but it's brought, and the kids try to pin us against each other, and, well, mom said this, or mommy said this, and we're always on the same page, and they know it.
Absolutely.
They communicate about everything. Kristen will text me during the day, just so you know when you come home, Giovanni cannot play video games. DeAndre had two timeouts. This is his punishment. We're on the same page at all times. And I don't know how you can be in a marriage and not be, especially with children.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you really support each other. I mean, I don't have kids, but it seems like one of the complaints that I hear from people is, I do all this and my partners, it seems like they're not getting what they need to take care of themselves. And it sounds like you must support each other and having what you need to be everything you need to be for these kids. I mean, it takes a lot to be what you need to be for these kids. And so obviously you must be nurturing each other, taking care of each other in such a great way that you're giving each other what you need to do what you do.
We're complete opposites. We are complete opposites, and we tell everybody that we're just an amazing team. It's that, sometimes I'm more the dominant person, and I am I work, yes, and I do the financials, and Kristen is more of the domestic, and we pick up where the other one is lacking completely, and it just works. I mean, what else could you say about it, Kristen? I mean, obviously, it works.
I think I agree with you. I don't. No matter what, it's we have the same parenting skills, and it just fits in.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, when people tell you they want to foster, or they come to you for advice on fostering, what do you say?
The first thing we say is, it's not for everybody, because it's not. You got to be able to let go. You got to be able to have your wall up. You have to have an open mind completely of what you. We don't know what a child's going to be until they come to our house.
No, they don't.
We have to get ourselves in that mindset that we're not doing it to keep each child. We're doing it to help them, and if we have to let go, it's okay. That leaves room open to help more children. And
you have to have a huge heart.
You have to, you have to want to fight. You have to want to fight to protect these children, to realize why
every
you're doing
day.
It in the beginning. Right. And question why you want to foster. Is it just because it sounds good or I really want to help children, or is it because I want to make a difference and save this child's life, because that's ultimately what you're doing. And people think that we're wrong, but it's not. They were saving their life, literally. If it's not today, then in 10 years from now, we're changing something to make them, help them make the right decisions, or to know right from wrong and to live the right way and to live safe.
And the kids that are actually reunified, they're going to remember us no matter what.
Always. It's just, and that's why you do it. You leave this impression on somebody that you hope that, it's going to get them through.
So is the plan to have five, just always keep five?
We laughed because Kristen wanted two. Kristen wanted two.
Oh, that's funny.
I wanted a big family.
Well, I wanted two. Maybe we can squeeze three. But
and we had three.
We had three.
And I get a text message saying, it's a girl. And I was like, what? What? Well, you know, the agency called and said they had this little girl that's 9 months old. And, yeah, of course, we got room. We'll take her. What?
Well, I always
you
wanted
even
a baby girl.
Me. You didn't talk to me. You were just like, yeah, bring her on. And that's
when
we got to four. I didn't think we were going to jump that quickly, but we did. And then we got the call about the last one. Well, we've had a few in between. We've done a lot of respite, which is we have taken kids in temporarily that were in a home that was being investigated. Or that Cameron came, he's one of the three-year-olds, he came to us as a respite. He was supposed to only be here for 2 weeks.
They dropped him off with a huge Tupperware container of clothes from fall, spring, winter, summer. And we were kind of confused as to why he was only going to be with us for 2 weeks.
If you're only going on vacation for 2 weeks, why do we have everything this child owns? And he never left, and now he's going to adoption. So
it was probably one of the best respites ever.
Yeah, but and then the last one we've gotten was the other three-year-old. We had five kids already at that time. We had another child in the house, and we made the decision to go to six at that point because of they begged us to take her. They told us that she was the one who's been in multiple foster homes, and no one could deal with her.
And they said that they knew that we could make a difference with her, that we could change her.
The head of the agency said that you two are the only ones that can do this. You're the only ones that can help her. And how do you say no to that?
Yeah.
So we said yes, and we got her that day. And
I went to go pick her up.
So people ask us all the time, how many kids are you going to stop at? We don't know. We don't know. We're leaving it open. And next week, we're getting our house expanded. So we can make more room. It just, I mean, once you help one, you want to help them all. You do. It's a hard thing to say no to somebody.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. I mean, like you said, knowing, especially when you know their stories, it's got to be really, really hard not to say no to them, for sure.
And then you imagine how many more kids are like them that don't have people like us to take them in. It's awful.
Well, I want to acknowledge you too. It's really amazing. I know you're very humble about it, but really, it's really remarkable. Not everyone, like you said, not everyone can do it, but even other foster parents. I think you two are just really remarkable people for doing what you're doing. And honestly, on behalf of all of us, I want to say thank you, because you are making a really big difference for these kids. And you know, I know there's a stat that's like 80% of people in jail were in foster care. I mean, it's like what you're doing is really having an enormous impact, and it impacts all of us. So it's really, really, really awesome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Now, when people say to us, it's, you know, they consider it a hobby. It's not a hobby. It's a life. It's a life.
No.
It's It's not a hobby at all. It's, we don't collect things to give to foster children as a hobby. We do it because of, they're not going to live otherwise. Even if it's something to make them smile today, it's going to make them different for tomorrow. Just that one thing that shows that somebody cared that much to give them something. It's, unless you see it firsthand, you would never know.
They appreciate everything you give them.
Everything. Every little thing. Everything. It shows that somebody, even if they don't even know me, cares. And that just makes the world for them. So, yeah, it's not a hobby at all. People say, oh, is this your hobby? No, it's not a hobby. This
something
is our life.
Called.
This is, I don't know.
It's like your contribution to the world.
Yes, and yeah, I guess so, but it just, I don't know. I don't look at it that way. I look at it as just each individual. You take one at a time. And in the meantime, we get the kids involved with doing our collections to donate stuff for back to school. We donate things for Christmas, for Easter, for all these holidays. And our kids are involved with it, too. And it shows that I'm helped. I want to help somebody else now. And it makes them feel good as well. It's just, I guess not a contribution to the world. It's just, people aren't doing enough, and we feel it's our job to do what we can.
To step in.
Why we can.
Really awesome. Is there anything else you want to mention before we wrap up?
I think we actually
think
mentioned
so.
Everything.
I really, really appreciate your time. It's awesome that you're blogging. You're really supporting, I'm sure, other people that are considering fostering, people that are in foster, that are currently fostering. I'm sure you help them a lot with just all the advocating you do for the kids. And we've helped
over 200 families now. Over 200, I say families, we've helped in either getting into the foster adoption process or seeing them through it. And that's why we're doing this, what we do, what we do. We have the
That's another reward.
Yeah.
That's another reward. There's so many more kids because of we're spreading the word and helping and sharing our life with people, and people are relating to this or opening their eyes to what's going on. And it's definitely helping out. It's been a good thing.
Sure. Well, I really, 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 really appreciate your time. I really appreciate what you're doing. And let everyone know where they can find you and your blog online.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's with thenextfamily.com. And, of course, it's under Diane Ponis, and they have a lot of great other blogs and articles out there, too, that are very helpful to many, many, many families. And you can find us on Facebook as well, Diane and Kristen Ponis.
Cool. And I have both of those links in the show notes already. Chris and Diane, thank you so much for sharing your story with everyone and inspiring people that are looking at fostering as an option. And then, of course, just for what you're doing for these kids, it really, really, really is amazing and beautiful and remarkable and inspiring. And it's a huge, huge, huge contribution. So thank you.
No problem. Thank you for talking with us. Thank you very much.
It was my honor and my pleasure. All right. Well, have a wonderful week.
You too. Bye-bye.
You too. Later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, everyone. What a beautiful story. Wow. Amazing. Really, it's just so beautiful to me that people give themselves so much to because they don't know, just to make a difference, and it makes an enormous difference, So I hope you enjoyed that. Definitely check them out at thenextfamily.com. The links are in the iTunes show notes. Have an amazing week, and we will catch you in a couple weeks talking about my interview with Susie on being a single lesbian parent. Talk to you soon.